Hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. We're here every Saturday night, 10 p.m. till 3 o'clock in the morning, bringing you all your favorite classic radio shows. In this hour, it's Escape, starring Ben Wright from 1953. Then we'll tune into part three of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. Lots coming your way, and it all starts after these words. Welcome back to Hour 3 of the WGN Radio Theater. What's better than free, Lisa? Anything?
Free is great.
Free,
what do you have in mind?
Well, I have five free classic radio shows for every single listener out there that can hear my voice right now.
And not just
And I know it's recorded. It's Memorex. It's not live because we are on Memorex tape now.
Right. Well, back maybe 40 years ago.
Remember those commercials?
I do. Is it live or is it Memorex?
Yeah, well, we're on Memorex because of the quarantine. But you know what? If you want to listen to five classic radio shows during this quarantine, now's the best time to go to our website, 100radioshows.com. It's the number 100radioshows.com. Go there and put your email in. You will get an email sent to you within like 10 seconds. It'll have five classic radio shows. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Fibber McGee and Molly, Suspense, Gunsmoke, Jack Benny, Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Right, and these aren't just any five shows. These are five great shows that are in pristine quality. They sound like they were recorded today. Yeah. Not even yesterday, but today.
That's right. And was it on Memorex?
No, it was not.
Okay. So when you go to that website, 100radioshows.com, you'll also see that there are like 700 additional classic radio shows available for purchase. If you decide you want to purchase any of those shows, make sure that you use the promo code
Radio. You will save 70% off the regular price. We know that this is a great time that you would definitely appreciate some classic radio in your collection.
That's right. Save 70%. Use the promo code radio at checkout. Okay. Are you ready for Escape?
Yes.
Escape was radio's greatest series of high adventure. It was really CBS's sister program to Suspense. It came to radio in 1947 for seven seasons, and William Conrad and Paul Frees were the voices of Escape. They often played roles too. It didn't have the star power or budget of Suspense because it had very few sponsors over the run. So sometimes they would even recycle Suspense scripts with different casts. Now, Escape had two of the top producers, William N. Robeson and Norman McDonald, and it utilized the best supporting players like Harry Bartell, Joseph Kearns, Ben Wright, John Daner, and others. Remember the opening? Tired of the everyday grind, ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
Your voice just dropped like three octaves right there.
Sounded like Roger Badish for a second.
Almost, but not quite. Maybe
and
David Jennings.
They'd say, we offer you Escape. And it was a great series, and we have an episode for you now from July 5th, 1953. This is called A Source of Irritation. It stars Ben Wright. Here's Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are a farmer, peacefully working the soil, planting your crops, while above you, deadly as a vulture, a man is descending who will carry you away to his lair, a place from which there is no escape.
So listen now as Escape brings you Stacy Aumonier's exciting story, A Source of Irritation.
You know, whenever the talk turns to the last war and who won it between the correspondents of the Overseas Press Club on Fleet Street, It becomes a hot two-way fight between the Americans and the Englishmen. Myself, I'm a shy man. I keep out of it and order myself a shot of Benedictine and brandy. But privately, I have my own candidate. You can take it for what it's worth, but I'd nominate old Sam Gates. I know about Sam because I had occasion to cover the story for the Times. It was during the days of the Blitzkrieg. The Netherlands, Norway, and Belgium had already fallen before the German panzer divisions, and the British Expeditionary Force was doing its grim best to help out in France. Old Sam Gates was on Mr. Dodge's farm in Halversham, hoeing turnips and waiting for his niece Aggie, who arrived twice daily, at dawn and at tea time, with his parcel of food.
Hello, Uncle.
Yeah. Oh, hello, Aggie.
Well, Uncle, is there any news?
You asked me the same question yesterday.
Did I?
Yes, and the day before that.
Well, it's another day. Any news today?
News? What do you want, girl? What news should there be?
Well, no harm asking.
You have my food?
Here you are, Uncle. We cut open a new cheese for you.
Well, I'll have a taste of it right now.
Did you hear Mrs. Coping's fowl got out last night?
Yeah.
And Mr. Dodge wants you to kill another pig tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, look! It's an aeroplane, Uncle.
Yeah, I got ears. Bloody nuisances of the war, these aeroplanes. Ours and theirs.
Oh, Uncle, did you know that Mrs. Hardwick's nephew Clarence has joined up? He's flying a Spitfire.
I knew he'd never amount to much.
Well, Mrs. Hardwick says that...
Aggie girl, the cows need milking.
All right, Uncle. You needn't get cross. I'm going.
Yeah. Bloody morning. If it ain't the girl, it's the aeroplanes.
Well, old Sam Gates went back to hoeing his turnips and muttering to himself about this fool world and its inhabitants. But it wasn't an hour later that his thoughts were interrupted by another plane overhead. He waited for it to go away, but it didn't. And what he heard made him look up, startled. A plane was coming down with a Nazi swastika clearly marked on its side, and it was coming down on his field.
Oi! Hey there! This ain't no flying field! Stop! Hey, can't you hear me? You can't land in them turnips. I just hold them. What, you there. Oh, you've kicked up 25 yards of Mr. Dodge's good Swedes. And what are you going to do about it?
Well, grandfather, stand back there where you are, I shoot.
Why, you've no right to come barging in here with that gun. What are you doing on English soil, anyways?
Another word and I finish you. Keep your hands in the air and walk to me. Schnell, be quick.
Now what do you want of me?
No questions. Closer. There. Halt.
Ach, no. Paul Joubert.
Heil Hitler.
Heil Hitler, me foot. I'm not much in favor of Mr. Hitler.
What are you talking about, Herr Joubert?
I ain't no one called Herr Joubert, and what's more, I don't want to be.
Eh? One moment.
What do you mean? My beard ain't for tugging. You've been and gone and lost your mind.
Quiet. You, what is your name?
Yeah, Sam Gates. And who are you?
Never mind. Lie down. Keep your face in the ground.
You going to shoot me?
Englander Schweinhund. Hurry, do as I say.
I suppose I'll have to.
Old Sam Gates did as he was told, and the pilot went to work on the engine of his photo reconnaissance plane. He located his trouble in a clogged fuel line and had it repaired in a few minutes. Then he looked at the old man and smiled grimly.
You, old man, get in the plane.
Well, what are you talking about? I ain't imitating fish nor bird. A man's 2 feet belong on the ground, and that's where mine are staying.
No discussion. Get in or I shoot.
What do you want me for?
Get in. You are going back with me. What is the matter, old grandfather? You are so pale.
What if I am? I ain't been in the hands of a madman before. I want to be set down this minute. I can't be flying about the country with hoeing still to do and Mr. Dodgy's turnips only half thinned.
Turnips.
Hey, what's that noise from?
You're Englishmen. They are shooting at us.
Who?
Better say your prayers, grandfather.
Oh, I've been praying, but I can't decide whether I want the Almighty to strike you down or save me.
The right wingtip shot away, the fuselage rent with holes as big as a man's fist. The Nazi reconnaissance plane, nevertheless, remained miraculously aloft. Neither Hausmann, the pilot, nor old Sam Gates was hurt. Sam was being spared for other things. Within minutes, they had crossed the channel and were gliding downwards. Sam knew by the roofs of the houses, the trees and streams, that he was in a foreign country. When they landed, Sam found himself behind German lines in France. The swastikas, the sea of unfamiliar faces shouting at each other in heathen gibberish, filled the old man with a strange dread. But he made up his mind to stick it through as he walked stiffly in front of the pilot's prodding pistol until they reached a zinc-roofed building and went in.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I'm going as far as I can. That airplane ride shook me up a bit.
Heil Hitler! Gib den Hausmann to see General von Schlegel.
General is occupied, Herr Kapitän.
I must see him.
Tomorrow morning.
It is a matter of extreme urgency. Take me to him immediately.
Very well, Herr Kapitän. Herr Kapitän Hausmann. Herr General.
Get the pipe out of your mouth. Stand at attention, grandfather. Heil Hitler.
Heil Hitler. Now, what is the meaning of this house, man? Who is this old farmer?
I brought him from England, Herr General.
Houseman, have you gone mad?
Ah, that he has. Mad as a March hare. Without a by your leave, he comes thundering out of the sky, kicking up 25 yards of good turnips, and snatches me from the honest toil to go flying off with him.
Quiet, you. Here, General, please look at him closely.
What do you expect me to see, Houseman?
No. Paul Joubert.
I never heard of any Paul Joubert. My name is Sam Gates. And as much as your flying machine grinds a man's bones to dust, I'll expect you to have one deliver me safe and sound to Mr. Dodgy's farm on my native soil. Or the king will hear this.
This is not Paul?
No, Herr General. Joubert is now a gardener at the convent of St. Eloise at Maillet-en-Anneau, 100 feet from British field headquarters in Paris.
I know where he is supposed to be. What is the point of all this, Houseman?
Well, Paul Joubert has practically become the eyes and ears of the German army. He delivered us the complete blueprints of the Maginot Line and every move the England has made.
You do not have to sing Paul's praises to me. I am well aware he is the best spy in the Third Reich.
The England has known that too. They put a reward of £10,000 on his head. Twice they have captured him and each time he has slipped from their fingers. They've gone so far as to distribute his photograph to all commanding officers and their staffs.
Houseman, you are pondering the obvious. Now, what about this old farmer?
He and Paul Joubert are exact identical in appearance.
Well?
I don't want grandfather to overhear. But suppose, Herr General, they found the dead body of Paul Joubert.
Houseman, you may have something there.
I'm certain of it.
put Grandfather in one of our uniforms, which bears identity card in his pocket, and allow the Englanders to find him dead behind our lines?
Excellent. The English will spread the word of Paul's death to the other allies, and the real Paul Joubert will be free to continue his labors undisturbed. Hausmann, you are a clever man.
Danke, Herr General.
Do not worry, Hausmann. Word of this will reach the Führer himself. But now we do not have a moment to lose. The English are attacking Hill 701, which we are abandoning within the hour to straighten our lines. The perfect place for our little plan. Take up a lieutenant shoots with you.
Ja, mein Herr.
Keep the farm at the front lines until the order for retreat is given. Then shoot him, but do not disfigure him. And be sure to lay him out face upwards.
I understand perfect.
Proceed immediately, Hausmann. Heil Hitler! Heil Hitler!
And then old Sam was forced into a Nazi officer's field uniform, a helmet placed on his head, and before he knew where he was going, he found himself at the front.
Look here, my legs are aching. When am I going back to my turnips?
You'll be back to the soil quite soon.
Herr Kapitän,
huh?
We are in the forward area now, and the retreat has started.
Well, I ain't going no further. No. You're not about to take me back to Mr. Dodge's farm, and it makes no difference to me whether you shoot me or I get blown to bitsies by one of them exploding things. No. I'll have me a last pipe full of tobacco either way. Oh, dread, this bucket of tin keeps falling over my eyes.
Keep moving and keep that helmet on your head. Down!
Here, Kapitän, that was too close. They had the range. Let us shoot him and get out of here.
Yeah. All right, Grandfather, you can have your pipe full of smoke now. Are you ready to shoot?
Come on.
Hey, fire!
That same day, the sun was hot in the midday sky, as an hour later, a forward patrol of English Tommies rounded Hill 701 and saw the bodies of Lieutenant Schutz, Captain Hausmann, and behind a rock, old Sam Gates, lying with his pipe still in his hand. They were about to move on when the corporal, coming up from the rear, stopped them.
Hold on a minute.
What's up, Corp? We've got to get back to battalion headquarters.
The one there with the pipe seems to be breathing.
Well, leave him to the aid boys. They'll be along in a bit.
Righto, Sergeant, but he might be a pretty big fish. That's headquarters insignia he's wearing.
All right, Simpson, see if we can bring him around. But we'll have to be quick about it.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, the sun must have struck me down. Ooh, give me an awful set of dreams. Oh, my poor red.
Can't make out what he's saying. Come on, give him an hand. Get him up. We got to get a move on.
Is this the prisoner, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. He's a bit shaken, but otherwise he's all right, sir. Seems to understand English.
Name?
Sam Gates.
Rank?
Don't know what you're talking about.
Rank, army rank.
Well, I have nothing to do with any armies. You mind telling me where the devil I am?
Huh? Speaks English like a native. Your identification card, please. Zigdina identification carta.
Look here, what are you talking Nazi for? You're an Englishman, same as I am.
Search him, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Here you are, sir.
Thank you, Sergeant. Well, the master spy himself, Paul Lupert. Hell, you won't get away from us this time, Paul.
Well, has the whole world gone daft? My name is Sam Gates, and I was christened so by me maiden Aunt Christina. And I'm no Paul Joubert, and I never was.
Good show, Paul. Good show.
My name ain't Paul. I can tell you where I was born and bred and who my wife is.
Yes, I'm sure you've got your story worked out to the last detail, but it won't do you a bit of good. You were tried by our court-martial September last, and the verdict still holds. You're going to be executed as soon as possible. Make out the order of execution, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
And you better take the staff car and run down to division headquarters and have General Cartwright sign it.
Really don't have much time, sir. Battalion has orders to move forward. Can't you proceed on your own authority?
Not with General Cartwright. He worked his way up through the ranks, and he never quite got over it.
Yes, sir. He doesn't like it much if you get your officer's commission out of the university. I know.
Well, and in particular, he's never forgiven me for having graduated from Oxford.
Well, capturing Dupere is going to be quite a feather in your cap, sir.
Yes. Well, get going, Lieutenant. If the General wants to witness the execution, tell him we'll be over at the bombed-out farmhouse.
Yes, sir.
Squad, halt! Now, there won't be any delay, men. Sergeant, Corporal, advance the prisoner to the wall. Keep your rifles cocked.
Yes, sir.
Right, sir.
Paul Joubert, have you anything to say before the sentence is executed?
My name is Sam Gates, and if I was 20 years younger, I'd give you a punch in the ruddy eye. Why, you had me guilty before I opened my mouth. You can go to bloody blue blazes.
Oh, very well. Is there any last request you have to make?
Ah, I want to smoke out a last pipeful of tobacco in peace and quiet. And I don't want none of that white cloth blinding me eyes.
A request granted.
Begging your pardon, sir, but the general's driven up.
All right, Sergeant.
All right, Maltby. What's this all about? Is that Paul Joubert?
Yes, sir. A most remarkable man. He not only bothered to learn English, but he even went to the trouble of mastering our local dialects. Calls himself Sam Gates. Had me fooled at first, sir, but I kept after the scent.
Bring the prisoner here.
Right, sir. But I'm afraid you won't get much out of him. He sticks to his own story. Sergeant, march the prisoner forward.
Say your name is Sam Gates?
It is. And if you had any sense, you'd believe me. I was minding my business, owing Mr. Dodge's turnips in Alversham, when this daft aviator comes swooping down in his airy plane, tearing up good Swedes, and he snatches me away with him.
Kidnapped, eh? And how did you manage to get into a Nazi officer's uniform? Explain that.
Oh, they was hatching something, that's what. They forced me to wear a tin bucket and their green soldier suits and made me go along with them.
Aren't we wasting time, sir? We found Joubert's identification card in his pocket.
I told you they was hatching something. They put it in my pocket.
How much do you expect us to believe?
Oh, I don't ask you to believe anything at all.
We'll get to the truth soon enough. Where were you born?
Alversham. 3 miles from Mr. Dodgy's farm and... What's more, I haven't set foot out of the country except once to visit the flower show at the market, Roughborough. And today, to go flying about with that madman...
Alversham, eh? It's a perfect characterization. It's a pity to execute so fine an actor.
Yeah.
Married?
Yes, I be.
And what's your wife's maiden name?
Annie Hatchett, as everyone in Alversham knows.
Good show. Who did you say you worked for?
Mr. Dodge. Charlie Dodge. And he raises horses and pigs besides.
And what you know, what do you grow besides turnips?
Runner beans.
Good show.
Sam.
Good show. Sam, then. Well, now see what you can do with this. What's the name of the local vicar? Ah, you don't know, do you?
Oh, I know well enough. But mentioning him set me thinking that I promised the vicar a pot of beans, which I never did bring. And what's worse, I ain't been to church in over a month or Sundays. Ah, maybe that's why the Almighty's placed my life in the hands of a pair of silly gaffers like the both of you.
But you haven't told us who's the vicar's name, you know.
It's the Reverend David Price, and a fine man he is.
David Price? Wait a minute. I know a Reverend Price. He baptized my niece's cousin. What does he look like?
Yeah. You're another one that's gone a bit loony, ain't you?
Just answer the question.
Well, if you know the Reverend, I don't have to tell you. He's got a mole on the left side of his face with a hair growing out of it. And his nose is crooked where a horse kicked him when he was 4 years old.
By heavens, he's right. It's the same man.
Well, what does that prove, sir? He might have met the man once.
And he might not be Paul Joubert after all.
Ah, now you're getting some sense at last. And if it's this Paul you're after, Well, I might be able to tell you where he's at.
Where, old man?
Well, he was a gardener somewhere. Don't rightly remember. I couldn't make out much of what they were saying.
No fear. I'm afraid we might be able to check up on it, eh?
Oh, it's coming. Oh, it's coming to me. There's some convent near the army headquarters in Paris. Mighty No, that's it.
Maintenant, no. The convent Saint-Louis, Maintenant, no. Colonel, send a code message to Paris and order them to arrest the gardener immediately.
Yes, sir.
And report back as soon as you hear anything. Mr. Gates, you come along with me.
Colonel Mosby reporting to the general, sir.
Well?
Message from GHQ. They've arrested the gardener, sir. He is Paul Joubert, all right.
You realize that Joubert might still be at large?
Yes, sir.
And Sam Gates here shot to death by his own people?
Yes, sir.
You're an Oxford man, aren't you, Mosby?
Yes, sir.
I never went to university. I worked my way up through the ranks. Dismiss! Mr. Gates, my apologies. Mm. Paul Joubert is under arrest. Your honor is vindicated.
Yeah, you'd have done better to listen to me in the first place.
Oh, I certainly would, sir. But you'll hear more of this. The king is certain to award you the Victoria Cross or something of that sort. Now, in the meantime, what can I do for you?
Well, I want to get back home.
That could be arranged.
Yeah, but I'd like to get home at tea time.
What time's that?
Well, 5 o'clock or thereabouts.
Wait a minute.
Yes, sir.
Bring up Wing Commander Jennings, RAF headquarters.
Yes, sir.
Jennings here?
General Cartwright, sir. One moment. Wing Commander Jennings, sir.
Right.
Wing Commander Jennings speaking.
This is General Cartwright. Have you flown the dispatch case out yet?
Oh, not yet, sir.
Good. There's a little matter which concerns the honor of the British Army.
Oh, what's that, sir?
Friend of mine's here, Sam Gates. Come over from England to give us some valuable information. And I promised to have him back at his farm at Aversham before tea time at 5 o'clock. Can you take a passenger?
Well, I might be able to manage it, sir, if I can ever find the place.
At a few minutes before 5, Wing Commander Jennings landed his light plane on Mr. Dodge's farm, being very careful to tear up as few turnips as possible. The commander shook hands with Sam and flew inland. The old man watched him and went slowly along and completed a line of turnips he had begun in the morning, as he watched for his niece Aggie to arrive with his parcel of food.
Hello, Uncle.
Yeah? Oh, hello, Aggie.
Well, Uncle, is there any news?
You asked me that very same question this morning.
Did I? Yeah. Well, it's another day gone. Any news today?
News? What do you want, girl? What news should there be? Ain't it enough to earn a bite to eat and a glass of beer without always wanting news, news, news? Heh! Drat you and your news. Now, you get back home and fetch the pot of runner beans to the vicar, and you'll be quick about it.
All right, Uncle.
Oi, and you tell him I'll be at church on Sunday next for sure.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you A Source of Irritation by Stacey Amonier, adapted by Meyer Dolinsky, and starring Ben Wright as Sam. Featured in the cast were High Everback, Paul Fries, Jack Crucian, Charlie Lung, Betty Harford, John Dodsworth, Alec Harford, Richard Peel, and Ramsey Hill. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stephen. This Monday night, Walk a Mile, the fast, furious, funny quiz show starring Bill Cullen, is yours for fun at the Star's address. Be listening every Monday as Walk a Mile struts its stuff on most of these same CBS radio stations to make it an eventful evening, side by side with Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts and Crime Classics. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, the stars still shine in the Summer Theater every Monday night on the CBS Radio Network.
That's Escape from July 5th, 1953, starring Ben Wright in A Source of Irritation. You know, when you have an irritation like that, you just put some salve on it.
I feel like you have multiple sources of irritations every moment of every day. That's like your thing.
I just put like, Bengay. Not Bengay, because that would not be the thing you put on an irritation.
Depends what kind of irritation it is.
Yeah, I would put like some kind of salve on it or something.
Right, an antibiotic ointment.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed Escape. All right, are you ready for part three of this five-part Yours Truly Johnny Dollar adventure?
I definitely don't keep them hanging any longer.
All right, it's called the Fathom Five Matter. It's from February 29th, 1956. Here's Bob Bailey as Yours Truly Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Barney Wilson, DA's office.
Oh, morning, Mr. Wilson.
Say, you're on an expense account, aren't you?
That's right.
Good, I'm not. How about buying me a lunch?
You got a deal. 12 o'clock here at my hotel?
Sold.
Found any more shoes?
No, and no bodies. Not yet, anyway.
I'm amazed.
Did find one thing you may be interested in, though.
What's that?
We got a lead on that license number you gave me last night. You were right. The car was bought from a dealer about 2 weeks ago.
By whom?
Somebody named John Smith, over on the east side of town.
That figures.
Well, maybe here's something that won't. I checked the address this morning. And you know what?
Sure, a vacant lot.
Well, now, how the devil did you know?
See you at lunch, Mr. Wilson.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, Miami Beach, Florida. To the Home Office, Delta Liability, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Fathom 5 matter. A sunken cruiser that refused to give up its dead. Item 10, $4.80. Lunch with DA Deputy Barney Wilson. A man who'd made up his mind about the case before I'd even arrived in town. Murder, he'd called it. When the hired cruiser Fathom 5 burned and sank mysteriously a mile or two offshore. But nobody'd been found yet, and I still doubted very much that one ever would be. Because I wasn't even certain that William Markey was dead. Wilson, of course, had different ideas.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dollar. It's the old, old story. Two men go out in a boat, and only one comes back. No witnesses, nothing. And if that doesn't indicate murder, I'd say, pass the sugar, will you, please?
Sure, here. You're convinced it's murder, and you're convinced young Danny Haynes did it.
Well, who else?
Well, now that would be a fine argument to advance in court, wouldn't it? Sure, sure. Certain conviction, simply because you can't produce any other suspect. Wilson, I don't think there's been any murder at all. You can pass me the sugar.
All right. Suppose you let me tell you how I figure it.
While I'm eating my dessert?
Markey and his wife took a liking to this Haynes kid and practically made him one of the family. And right there was their mistake.
It usually is.
Because Haynes started getting ideas about his boss's wife. You have to admit, Mrs. Markey is a mighty pretty woman.
Who could deny it?
She's Haynes' own age, and her husband was older. So the kid in that bird brain of his figured he had it all tagged. Figured she actually went for him. I think he probably started bothering her, making a nuisance out of himself. And I'll lay you odds she'll admit he did, once she's convinced he's guilty.
Well, I got a sneaking hunch you may be right on that.
Oh, thank you, thank you. So what happened? Markey finally noticed the kid was getting a little out of line. Probably didn't even take it seriously at first, but eventually he must have decided he'd better get Haynes straightened out.
So he took him out on that fishing boat in order to talk to him alone, is that it?
Now you're worth a dollar. But the thing backfired. Haynes probably got mad, maybe started a fight, knocked Markey out, and that gave him his big idea.
Spur of the moment, huh?
Yes, sir. Now, with the boss out of the way, he'd have a clear field with the widow. So you threw Markey overboard, set fire to the cruiser, opened the sea cockswain to be sure and sink, and then rowed away in the dinghy.
And how could he be sure the body wouldn't be found, washed ashore by the currents?
Oh, he couldn't be sure. But what if it was? There was a heavy fog. Nobody saw what happened. He knew it'd be mighty tough to prove anything on him.
Oh, brother, that's an understatement. As a matter of fact, it'll be impossible to prove that story.
Yeah, well, once he's arrested and interrogated, I figure he'll break down and tell us the whole thing.
Not unless he's completely simple-minded. No, you haven't even got the shadow of a case, Mr. Wilson. All you've got is a wild theory that doesn't even fit the facts.
You got a better theory, I suppose.
I think so.
And would it be the kind that would take your company off the hook on that $75,000 life insurance policy?
Now, by coincidence, it just so happens that it would. In fact, that insurance policy is the key to the whole thing.
I sort of thought you might say that.
I didn't have any pet theory at first, but I do now. I'm pretty sure this thing is an out-and-out insurance fraud, and Danny Haynes is being used as the fall guy.
Oh, do tell. And what are you finding for evidence, Mr. Dowling?
Oh, a lot of little things that are sort of starting to add up. For one thing, I got a long telegram this morning from a firm of confidential investigators in New York. I forwarded a request through Hartford yesterday. Yeah, they turned up quite a lot on Markey.
Such as?
His financial status for the main thing.
Oh, well, go on.
Well, when he and Mrs. Markey were married 3 years ago, the firm was in first-class shape. But they've been living high, living up his capital. If he'd got that contract he came down here after, it might have pulled him through, but he didn't get it. Net result, he was flat broke.
So what? A lot of people are broke.
But not many of them have a $75,000 policy.
I thought that's what you were getting at.
What I am getting at is what I think happened. And I think Danny Haynes is telling the truth. I think Markey did send him off alone in that dinghy. Then Markey fired the boat, opened the Seacocks, and while she filled up and sank, he swam ashore in the fog. And he's waiting it out somewhere now until his widow collects the insurance.
Well, I don't see where you've got any more evidence than I have.
Well, there's not much, I'll grant you. Not so far. But what there is adds up.
I guess I'm just stupid, Dolly.
All right, look. Take Mrs. Markey's attitude, for instance. She's trying hard to play the role, but it doesn't come off. Now, does she act to you like a four-day widow?
Well, she's got a lot of self-control.
Oh, I'll say she has. I tried to goad her yesterday when I talked to her, came right out and practically insulted her. And how did she react? Never took her eyes off that main chance, the $75,000.
Well, you know, it's not exactly unheard of for a widow not to mind too much being a widow.
Oh, no, no, that's not the impression she gives. She's tense enough, nervous as a cat. But it's not because of grief or any feeling of relief, either. It's because she's afraid she might say the wrong thing and let her foot slip.
Well, everybody's got a right to their own opinion.
Another thing is that Markey's body hasn't turned up. Now, I talked to the harbor master this morning. He knows the currents along this coast backwards and forwards. He says it's the only one chance in 100 that Markey's body would have been carried out through the reef instead of thrown up on the beach about where you found that shoe.
So, this is the one time in 100. Well, that was a mighty fine lunch, Mr. Dollar.
We're going to fight you, Mr. Wilson, if you petition the court to declare Markey legally dead.
Yes, I sort of figured you would. Hensley and Davis phoned me this morning and said you'd retain them as counsel.
That's right.
Well, I've been fought before.
Expense account item 11, 10 cents. Phone call to Edna Markey, widow of the allegedly deceased and beneficiary of his insurance policy.
Hello?
Mrs. Markey?
Yes?
This is Johnny Dollar.
Oh. Oh, I didn't recognize your voice.
I wonder if I can ask a favor of you.
Well, if it's something I can...
I'd like to borrow a photograph of your late husband for a few hours.
Well?
I'll take good care of it. Make sure it gets back to you.
Well, the fact is, I really don't have one.
Oh, well, you must have forgotten. I noticed one yesterday afternoon on the mantel in your study.
Well, I meant not a good one.
Well, that one will do fine, and thanks a lot.
Has something new come up, Mr. Dollar?
Yes, you might say that. I'll send a messenger out to pick it up. Goodbye, Mrs. Markey. Item 12, $3.80, messenger service. Item 13, $1.90, taxi fare to the used car lot of one Truthful Tom, the dealer who'd sold a car to a man named John Smith. A car that had departed suddenly from the vicinity of the Markey Beach House when its driver saw me come out of the house. I wasn't too sure whether Tom was truthful or not, but one thing was certain, he was typical.
I notice you looking at that little gray job, friend, and I say to myself, Truthful Tom, don't you go trying to get the best of that lad, because he's walked right in here and spotted the best doggone buy on the lot before he's even turned around.
Well, I wasn't really thinking of buying it.
Friend, with the price I'll make you on that car, you can't afford not to buy it.
No, I'm not really in the market.
It's an economic society, friend. We're all in the market when the price is right.
No, I just happened to notice that it looked like the car a friend of mine had stolen a few weeks ago.
My dear friend, I'll make you... Did you say stolen?
Oh, it may not be the same one, of course.
I've got papers on that car. I've got papers on every last car on this lot.
Did you have papers on the one you sold to John Smith 2 weeks ago?
If he says I didn't, he's a liar.
Now, wait a minute, mister.
And I can get a dozen witnesses to prove it.
You remember him, then? Well, do you?
Remember who?
Look, I'm a special investigator for the Delta Liability.
It's a frame-up, that's all it is. Whoever it is says they got a hot car deal on this lot is lying. Truthful Tom never turned a dishonest penny in his whole doggone life.
Good, then we'll forget it.
And any low-down rat that says I did's a two-legged snake, and I... What'd you say?
I don't care anything about your deals. I'm trying to locate a fellow who bought a car from you.
Well, friend, that puts a different light on it. John Smith, you said?
That's the name he used.
I can't say I recollect anybody by that name.
Here's a copy of the title registry on the car.
Now, let's see now. 6842, dark green... Oh, that was that old clunker that... of course, it was well worth the price I was asking.
Do you remember the buyer?
You bet your life. You know why? Because he paid cash. Not a check, cash. I mean, the real long green Missoula.
Would you recognize a photograph of him?
Well, I might if... Oh, is this it? Well, let's see now.
Well?
No doubt of it, friend. That's the lad, all right.
Good evening, Mrs. Markey.
Mr. Dollar.
I brought back the photograph of your husband.
Oh, there wasn't that much hurry about it. Did it help any?
Quite a bit. Do you mind if I come in?
Well, all right, of course.
Thank you.
You know, I've been trying to think all day long what you could possibly want with that picture. I still can't imagine.
You can't, huh?
Sit down, Mr. Dollar.
Thanks.
It's a terrible picture, of course. That's why I hesitated about giving it to you. Doesn't look a thing like him.
It looked enough like him, Mrs. Markey.
Enough like him? I don't think I know what you mean.
Did you know your husband bought a second-hand car the week before his so-called death?
You must be mistaken. He'd have told me about it.
The car dealer positively identifies his photograph. He used the name John Smith, paid for it in cash.
What did you mean, so-called death?
William Markey isn't dead. I think we're both aware of that. Well, Mrs. Markey, aren't we?
Do you mind telling me what you're talking about?
It wasn't even a very smart scheme to start with. Your husband must have been really up against the wall, or he'd have known better than to try it. But I suppose he thought he had to in order to hang on to you. I imagine you're pretty expensive to support.
I think you'd better leave right now.
Actually, it would serve you both right if I did. But I decided to give you a chance. I came here to let you know exactly where you stand.
And where is that, if I may ask?
One step away from prison. Take that step and you're in up to your necks, you and your husband both.
What step?
So far, we have no case against you for attempted fraud because you haven't filed a claim yet. But take my advice, Mrs. Markey, don't file one, because the minute you do, we're going to hit you with both barrels.
You've got some pretty crazy ideas, haven't you?
You've had fair warning.
I've had one of the biggest bluffs I've ever heard about. Why, you people would do anything, wouldn't you, to keep from paying off an apology?
Better talk it over with your husband before you do anything foolish.
My husband is dead, Mr. Dollar. No one but you even doubts it.
I'm a cynic.
How much proof does it take to bring you to your senses?
Mrs. Markey, as this case stands right now, there's only one way you could convince me that William Markey is not alive. Show me his dead body.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, a crazy kid in love, a right decision by a court, and then the whole case smashes wide open. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood, written by Les Crutchfield. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
That's part three of this five-part adventure, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, from February 29, 1956, with a Fathom 5 matter starring Bob Bailey. More of the WGN Radio Theater after this short break.
Every 6 days in the U.S., a tow truck operator is hit and killed on our highways. It's up to you to remember the three C's of safety: caution, courtesy, and above all, common sense. Remember, the life you save could be your own. This message courtesy of Nick's Towing, where they are working hard for the future of our great community. For all of your towing needs, call 847-671-5290. 847-671-5290. That's Nick's Towing in Chicago, on the air because they care.
In our next hour, we're going to rocket off into space with Dimension X from 1950. Then it's part four of the Fathom 5 matter on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. That's all coming your way after the news. Hour four of the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa and I are here every single Saturday night from 10 p.m. until 3 o'clock in the morning. 5 hours of your favorite classic radio shows. And in this hour, it is a good sci-fi adventure on Dimension X going back to 1950. Then it's part four of the Fathom 5 matter on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. It all starts right after these words. Hour four of the WGN Radio Theater. And before we tune into Dimension X, I want to remind all of our listeners that Woodman's, one of our best sponsors here on the WGN Radio Theater, gives you 12 classic radio shows just for shopping at Woodman's. All you have to do, shop at Woodman's, then take your Woodman's receipt and take a photo of it with your smartphone. Email it to us at woodmanswgn@gmail.com, and we'll send you, within 36 hours, you will receive 12 classic radio shows via link. It's Woodman's way of saying thanks for shopping at Woodman's.
Right. Woodman's is a great, great grocery store. We know that you'll appreciate shopping there. If you haven't ever tried it, give it a try. They have great items at very low prices.
Yes, they do. And they have the largest carts.
And the largest shopping carts. I was trying not to say that, but
let me tell you something.
That's Carl's favorite part.
Like me and my son and maybe even my daughter can fit in the shopping carts at
Woodman's. Maybe your son and daughter, but I don't know if you're going to fit in there.
I tell you what, I load up at Woodman's and then I'm good for like 2 weeks.
Yes, definitely.
I load up and then, I save a ton of money because Woodman's is great. And folks, when you go to Woodman's, make sure, don't throw that receipt out. It's worth 12 classic radio shows.
Well, when things get better and we're allowed to shop together,
yeah,
then I will put you in that cart and send you right down those long aisles.
Send me down an aisle. All right, once again, take a photo of your receipt, send it to woodmanswgn@gmail.com. Okay, Lisa, time now for Dimension X. This was radio's premier adult science fiction series. It came to radio in 1950 over NBC. Now, science fiction prior to Dimension X had been for juvenile audiences, really, like Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers. Occasionally, there was a sci-fi story appearing on Suspense or Escape. But once the popular movie Destination Moon hit movie houses in 1950 and there was a real interest in adult science fiction, well, then radio woke up to that and thought, hey, let's do a regular radio series. And Dimension X was it. We have a broadcast for you now from May 13th, 1950. This is called Almost Human, and it stars Santos Ortega. Here is Dimension X.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense.
Dimension X.
Have you heard of the new science called cybernetics? It concerns man's efforts to develop a perfect thinking machine, a robot electronic brain that will not only do man's work, but even do his thinking for him. A robot that is almost human. No, it's not impossible at all. In fact, one day something like this may happen. A tall, suave gentleman in a black raincoat will walk down the street until he reaches a shuttered, isolated house. Then he will slowly mount the front steps and push the doorbell.
Just a minute. I said just a minute. Hold your horses. Who do you think...
Good evening, my dear.
Duke.
Looking lovely as ever. What? Can I come in, Lola?
Why did you come here?
Curiosity, darling. I've been thinking over what you told me at our chance meeting last week.
Duke, you promised me
I decided to come and take a look for myself. Where's the professor?
In his study.
Anyone else in the house?
No, just the professor and I.
Where's Junior?
In the nursery.
The nursery? Oh, quaint. And you, I take it, are Junior's nursemaid?
I help the professor.
Tell him he has a guest.
Duke, he's a nice old guy.
Tell him, darling.
All right.
Yeah. What is it, Miss Williams?
Professor Blossoman, a gentleman is...
What? Here? I don't understand.
He's waiting for you.
But I gave orders. No one was to be admitted to the house.
He insisted.
Very well. Now, you wait here, and I will get rid of him. Sir, what can I do for you?
Professor Blossoman?
Yes? How do you know my name?
I've come to see Junior.
Junior? Well, there must be some mistake. There are no children in this house.
Professor, what you feel pressing against your belly is the muzzle of a .45 caliber pistol.
Oh.
Now, shall we visit Junior?
What do you know about this?
I know everything. Shall we go inside?
I warn you.
On the contrary, I warn you.
Very well. This way. This is the nursery.
Where is Junior?
In the next room. Behind the door is the panel in it.
Very considerately furnished. Mother Goose figures on the wall. Black horse, toy blocks, panda, bunny rabbit doll. Touching. All right. Let's see him.
Now you can look through the panel.
Oh, yeah. Who'd have believed it? Junior isn't very pretty, is he?
Oh, I wasn't concerned with aesthetics.
Why do you hide him? Is he dangerous?
Oh, you see, the world is not yet ready for such a thing. Besides, I must study him. As you can see by his play, he is very young, hardly out of the cradle. I'm educating him.
With nursery rhymes?
The brain is undeveloped. It must learn its behavior patterns like any infant.
Oh, come now. You call that 8-foot monster an infant?
Physically, of course, he will never change. He is built of chrome, steel, and glass. But his brain, that is my wonderful instrument. Unlike a human, he has no heritage, no basic instinct, such as love or hate. But this is none of your business.
This is making it my business.
Well, then in some respects he is like a blank tablet. What is written upon the tablet will remain.
You mean he has no feelings?
He will learn quickly, very quickly, because his brain is not blocked by emotional considerations.
Most interesting.
Yes. Well, now if your curiosity is satisfied, I trust you will keep my secret. If anyone discovered at this point...
Open the door.
I beg your pardon?
The door. I want to see Junior in person. I almost said in the flesh.
Now, look here. I don't know you. I don't know how you learned my secret. Only Miss Williams and
the
I are
door,
supposed...
Professor.
Very well. Junior. Come here.
What a monster.
Papa?
He talks? Of course. Mentally, he is now about 6 years old. Yes. Now, what is it, son?
Who is that man, Papa?
Now, let me handle this. You may call me Duke, son. I've come to meet you.
That's nice. Nobody ever comes to see me except Lola. Miss Williams. Do you like to play with blacks?
Why, yes. Nothing the Duke enjoys more than playing with blocks.
Play with me, Duke?
Certainly, Junior.
But I don't understand what you're trying to do. Who are you?
It's quite simple. I came to play with Junior. We're going to be friends, Junior and I. When I finished playing, you can have Lola. Miss Williams, prepare my room.
Your room?
I forgot to tell you. I've decided to stay until the climate changes and I can go out again.
No, no, this has gone far enough. You break into my home. You force me at gunpoint to open my laboratory, and then you tell me you are moving in. I won't stand for it. I call the police.
I'm sure the police will be interested in Junior. Newspapers will be delighted to print your obituary, too.
What do you want?
I told you. I want a comfortable room, no rumpus with police. And an opportunity to play blocks with Junior. Agreed?
Oh, you are hiding from the law?
As you wish. Now, leave us alone, Professor.
Yes, I will.
All right, Junior, your move.
Let's build a bridge.
I have a better idea, Junior.
What?
Let's build a coffin.
A coffin? I don't know that word.
I'll teach you, Junior. I can see the professor's been neglecting the moral side of your education very sadly. Lola. Oh, Lola, you're wonderful.
You shouldn't have come here, Duke.
Why not, my dear? You're not afraid of me.
No, I'm afraid of myself. You're no good for me, Duke. You always brought me trouble. Duke, what have you been teaching that thing?
Nothing, honey. I've just been playing with him. Very educational.
I don't believe you.
What's eating you, Lola?
Today, when I walked in there, he said to me, I know how to kill people, Lola. I'll kill you if you want me to.
He's learning very quickly.
Oh, Duke, I'm scared of that thing. It's unholy. A machine that acts like a human. With that voice grinding at you and saying things you'd expect from a child.
You dislike him so much, why did you take this job as his nursemaid?
I answered an ad. I wanted to start over again. The professor didn't ask questions. I would have been all right, too, if you hadn't come along.
I'm very glad you did tell me, darling. Because Junior is going to make us two very successful people.
How do you figure that?
You don't think I spend hours each day playing with Junior just to kill time, do you? I'm improving his mind, darling.
Improving
his mind? Like any child, Junior listens to what he's told and imitates his parents. Right now, his parents are you and me.
Ha! Couple of fine examples we are. I don't know what you're teaching, Junior Duke, but I can guess. And it isn't right. It's evil.
Oh, my dear, you know me better than that. What makes you think I'd teach a child anything evil? I never taught you anything evil, did I, darling? Well, did I?
Yes, you did. Only you taught me to like it.
Now, Junior, right on the blackboard, my name is Junior.
My name is Junior.
People are evil.
People are evil.
Evil must be destroyed.
Evil must be destroyed.
The professor is evil.
The professor is evil.
The professor must be...
What are you doing?
I warned you to keep out of the nursery, Professor.
What are you teaching him?
I said get out of here.
Junior, what are you doing?
Go away.
Junior, you don't even remember me, Junior.
I know you. You're Professor Blossoman. You want to keep me as your slave. You didn't tell me about things, about outside. You didn't tell me that people are evil.
You people are not evil.
Yes, they are. They must be destroyed.
Oh, stop it.
I'm not a child any longer.
No, you are not a child. You are a monster.
Junior.
Yes, Duke?
Remember your lesson.
Yes, Duke.
The time is now, Junior.
Yes, Duke.
Oh, keep away from me.
Now, Junior.
Yes, Duke.
Junior. Junior, don't do it. Listen to me. Junior, listen to me.
I did it, Duke.
Duke, I heard... Oh, horrible.
Can we go away now, Duke? I don't like it here anymore.
Yes, Junior, I think we're ready to go away now.
Duke, why did you do it?
The professor was in the way. We have to move very quickly now, Lola.
We?
Of course, if you don't plan to come along, just say so. I can have Junior write your name on his blackboard.
Duke, you wouldn't.
We'll go to Charlie's.
With Junior?
With Junior.
Oh, Duke, you can't. I'm afraid.
Relax, my dear. I have great plans for you two. Wouldn't you like to be independently wealthy for the rest of your life?
The only way you get that way is by inheriting a million.
Not when you have a fellow like Junior around.
Duke.
Junior is mine. He obeys me. What you might call a mechanical stooge.
I'm still afraid of him.
Lola, Junior wouldn't hurt you. You wouldn't hurt Lola, would you, Junior? You remember what I told you about Lola? You like Lola, don't you, Junior?
Oh, yes. I like Lola. She's pretty.
You see? Junior's growing up. He thinks you're pretty. Just a wolf in steel clothing, eh, Junior?
She's pretty.
All right, we're wasting time. Okay, Junior, mesh gears. We're stepping out into the big, wide world. Sit down, Charlie.
Yeah, sure, Duke.
Lola and I are going to hide out here for a while. We'll need some help.
Listen, Duke, I'm trying to keep the cops away.
You wouldn't refuse the Duke your hospitality, would you, Charlie?
Why, it ain't that,
Good.
Duke.
Good. Now listen to me. I need a casing job done.
Casing job?
You know the armored truck service?
Yeah, sure.
I want to know when they take the Acme deposits from Boston and Worcester.
Well, Duke, you ain't thinking of a payroll truck, are you? They got cannons on those trucks. They travel in pairs. You couldn't get near one of them.
I asked you to do a casing job, Charlie.
Yeah, sure, Duke. Anything you say.
Find out what time they pass the narrowest and most deserted stretch of road.
If you're going to pull a job like that, you'll need 50 men. You want me to get some of the boys?
I won't need anybody. I've got somebody.
Where?
He's out in the car.
What's his name, Duke? Anybody I know?
His name is Junior.
I don't know any Junior.
You will, Charlie. You will.
Smoke, Sam.
Oh, thanks, Al. Boy, it sure gets hot in these armored trucks.
Hey, you get used to it after you've been driving one for 15 years like I have.
How much we hauling this time?
About $250,000.
Brother, could I use a hunk of that?
Yeah, who couldn't?
Well, it'll be coming into Worcester any minute now. It's almost midnight. Yeah, what's our first stop?
Acme National Bank. Then we unload a payroll at the Bronson Watch Plant.
Yeah, I wish we could open a window and get some fresh air.
We can get that after we unload. It's a rule of the company that we... What's that up ahead?
Looks like something shiny in the road.
Throw up your spotlight.
Right. Holy smoke. You see what I see? Looks like a mechanical traffic cop.
About 8 feet tall. Yeah,
standing right in the middle of the highway. Must be a Halloween gag. Can you get past him?
I don't know. We'll have to slow down. Get on that gun, Sam. Let's take no chances.
All right.
I'll give it the horn.
Don't budge.
Where's our escort truck?
It's pulled up right behind us.
Thing won't move.
Sure looks like something out of Buck Rogers, don't it?
This is a heck of a note blocking traffic like that. We'll have to try and get past it.
It looks like you might squeeze by in the shoulder.
Here it goes.
Holy smokes, it's moving. It's coming toward us.
Yeah. Get on that gun. Give it a blast.
The bullets are bouncing right off it. It's still coming. Look at the eyes. Al, back up.
I can't. The other truck's right behind me.
Al!
It's lifting its arm.
Al's gonna smash our window!
Jeez. I haven't seen it with my own eyes. Duke,
We gotta quit this.
What's the matter, Charlie? Getting shaky?
Oh, you know me, Duke. Takes nerve. Charlie's always been right there. But this, the papers say he killed all four drivers. Listen, Duke, that robot is hot. We gotta get rid of it.
Stop your blubbering.
I don't mind a little heist, but killing four guys.
You know, Charlie, for a fat man, you certainly have a slim mind. You ought to take a lesson from Junior. He doesn't worry. He doesn't even know what a policeman is. He has no conscience. He never sleeps. He doesn't get tired. He doesn't even want a share of the profits. All we need is one more good robbery.
You ain't gonna pull another one.
Why not?
Count me out, Duke. You have to lamb out of here with Lola and that thing there. I'm getting too jumpy. The law's gonna track that baby.
Are you quite finished, Charlie?
You got no heart, Duke. You're like Junior, all steel inside.
And you're just a big, warm-hearted slob.
Well, I got nerves. I can't stand the thing. The way it looks at you with that iron face and the clanking around it.
Hello, Junior.
Hello, Duke.
I've just been talking to Charlie.
Yes, Duke?
You know what I think, Junior?
What, Duke?
I think Charlie's yellow. You know what happens to people who turn yellow, don't you?
Yes, Duke.
Tell Charlie.
They're evil. We have to destroy them.
You see, Charlie? Junior has a sense of values. He doesn't like people who sing to the police.
Now, Duke, wait a minute. You know I never turned stooley on anything like that. I never sang to the coppers in my life.
But you'll sing to Junior, won't you, Charlie?
What?
Sing Junior a nursery rhyme.
What do you mean?
You heard me. Sing Junior a nursery rhyme. Maybe Little Bo Peep. Junior likes Little Bo Peep.
Duke.
Sing it.
Little Bo Peep has... Duke, listen to me. I didn't...
Bring it, Charlie.
You can stay here as long as you like, Duke. You too, Junior.
You see, Junior? He's yellow. Sing it, Charlie.
Little Bo Peep has lost her sheep and can't tell where to find them.
Junior?
Yes, Duke?
Leave them alone, and they'll...
Now, Duke.
Now, Junior.
And they'll come home... Duke!
I stopped him, Duke.
All right, Junior. Clean him up. Take him down the cellar.
Duke, I was in the other room and... Charlie! Oh, Junior, put him down.
Take him down to the furnace, Junior.
Yes, Duke.
Oh, Duke. Duke, you can't...
Relax, darling. Stop shaking.
Oh, Duke, we can't stay here now.
No?
We've got to get out of here. Charlie's going to be missed. He's got friends. Now we'll have the gangs after us, too.
Stop worrying, darling. I'll take care of everything.
Where are you going?
Out to a travel agency. You and I are going to take a trip, Lola.
You're leaving me alone?
Nothing to worry about. The roadhouse downstairs is closed. Nobody will bother you.
Oh, that doesn't frighten me. It's being alone with that thing. I've got the jitters, too.
It'll only be for the afternoon. I've got to get reservations and plan this thing. Look, honey, 48 hours, you and I will be on our way to Switzerland with $500,000 worth of loot.
What about Junior?
Junior will be taken care of. Pity I have to do it. I'd kind of like to send him out on his own. Why not? He has a fine education. He could go out into...
Stop it. How can you get rid of him?
Junior will do anything I say. So I'll merely have him get into the furnace and sit there while I fill it with oil and set fire to it.
Oh.
Too bad the professor couldn't have stayed around to see him growing up. He's almost a man now, Junior is. But not quite as clever as a man. You'll find that out after he steps into the furnace.
All right. But do it now, Duke, before you leave.
There's no time now. Keep your chin up. I'll be back about 8.
Duke, you are coming back, aren't you? You wouldn't leave me.
Leave you? I have big plans for you, Lola. You see, I find you very attractive.
You're not good for me. I don't want you.
As long as you can tell yourself you're not really kissing me because you want to, why not enjoy it? I know you, Lola.
Yeah. You know, too much for one man.
Well, I'm going now. Be nice to Junior while I'm gone. Don't show him you're afraid of him. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye, Duke.
Lola?
What, Junior?
Lola? Oil me.
And Duke might not like it. Can't you wait till he gets back?
I want you to oil me, Lola.
All right.
I like you to oil me.
Yes, Junior.
Are we going away from here, Lola?
Yes, we're going away.
That'll be nice. I don't like it here. I want to see more things. I want to see a roller coaster.
Where'd you hear about a roller coaster?
I read about it in a book. Charlie gave me a book.
No.
Will Duke let me ride on a roller coaster?
I don't know. Maybe.
You like Duke, Lola?
Why, certainly.
Do you like me?
You know I do, Junior.
Lola?
What?
Who do you like best? Me or Duke?
I like you both, Junior.
Yes. But who do you love?
What do you know about love?
In the books, man and woman love.
Oh.
Lola?
Yes?
Do you think anyone will ever love me? I'm different. I'm a robot.
You want somebody to love you, Junior?
I want something, Lola. I guess that's what I want. It's very lonesome being a robot. Do you think it makes a difference?
I think some women can fall in love with anything, Junior. Even with a man like Duke.
Why, Lola?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because, well, as long as she thinks her man is the smartest and the strongest.
Oh.
Where are you going?
To wait for Duke.
Oh, he won't be home for a while.
I'll sit in the hall and wait for him.
All right, Junior.
I want to be alone and think.
About what?
I read in a book today it was bad to kill people. What does that mean? Bad?
Bad? I don't know, Junior. Guess it's just a word.
Lola?
Hello, Duke.
Oh, it's you. What are you doing sitting in the dark?
I was waiting for you, Duke.
Oh, that's a good boy, Junior.
Duke, Lola oiled me.
Well, that's nice. Tell you what, Junior. I've got a little job for us down in the cellar. Let's go down there.
Now, Duke?
Right now, Junior.
All right, Duke. Are we going away soon?
Yes, Junior, we're going away.
What's in the cellar, Duke?
A little surprise for you, Junior. You'll find out.
Duke? Is that you? Junior.
Hello, Lola.
I thought I heard Duke come in.
He came in.
Where is he?
Down the cellar.
What's he doing?
Nothing.
Did he say he'd be up soon?
No.
Maybe you'd better go down and get him.
He's dead.
Oh, no. Oh, he's dead.
You said the woman loves the strongest and the smartest. Well, I'm stronger and smarter.
But you are human.
I'm almost human, Lola.
No. Oh, stay away.
Lola.
Oh, those metal hands. Don't touch me.
I love you, Lola.
No.
I love you.
No.
I love you.
No.
I love you.
The last thing she heard was the robot's harsh voice. Droning it over and over again.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
And strangely enough, it did sound almost human. have just heard the Robert Bloch story titled Almost Human. Another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of... Dimension X. Next week, a strange story of other worlds. The story of the lost race. Tonight's adventure in Dimension X was adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Santos Ortega as Duke, Rita Lynn as Lola, and Jackie Grimes as Junior. Your host was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman, engineer Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by Van Woodward and directed by Edward King. Hear the Phil Harris's tomorrow, now Truth or Consequences, on NBC.
And that's Dimension X from May 13th, 1950, with Almost Human, starring Santos Ortega, is heard on NBC. All right, it's part four of this five-part adventure now, the Fathom 5 matter. Let's go back to March 1st, 1956. Bob Bailey stars. Here's yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar? Yes, just a moment. It's for you, Mr. Dollar.
Thanks. Johnny Dollar.
Barney Wilson here. Your hotel told me where to locate you.
I'd rather you located that car.
All the police agencies in the state have the license number and description. It'll turn up.
Well, the sooner the better.
It'll take more than a car to prove William Markey is still alive.
The dealer who sold it to him identified his photograph.
All right, but he bought the car 2 weeks ago. We know he was alive at that time. In case you've forgotten, Mr. Dollar, the Fathom 5 sank only 4 days ago. That's when Markey was murdered.
Okay, okay. We're not going to settle it by arguing.
That's why I phoned. It's going to be settled tomorrow morning.
You've petitioned for a hearing?
10 o'clock in Judge Campbell's chambers.
You're making a mistake.
See you in court, Mr. Dollar.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Miami Beach, to the Home Office, Delta Liability, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment... The Fathom 5 matter. The case of a cruiser mysteriously sunk off the Florida coast. I phoned the insurance company's legal counsel and told him that Wilson had petitioned a hearing to have William Markey declared legally dead. Then I rejoined Mrs. Markey in the study. She was tense and on edge, pacing the floor and smoking nervously. I watched her a moment without saying anything, fully aware of her beauty and appeal. And fully convinced also that she and her missing husband were trying to swindle my company out of $75,000 in life insurance. I felt a little sorry for Markey. She must have been a pretty expensive luxury for a man who was going broke. But then I stopped feeling sorry. I remembered that they'd tried to set up young Danny Haynes as the fall guy for murder.
Well, why don't you go ahead and say it?
Say what?
Whatever it is you're thinking.
I thought I'd already said it, and pretty bluntly, too.
You made some wild accusations.
Not so wild. I've got some fairly solid facts to back them up.
Apparently the DA's office doesn't agree with you. Wasn't that Mr. Wilson on the phone?
That's right.
And didn't he say he would ask the court to declare my husband legally dead?
He's going to try to, but we'll stop him cold. He hasn't got a leg to stand on.
Well, that's what you're hired for, isn't it? To find some technicality so they can get out of paying off on a policy?
Attempted fraud isn't exactly a technicality, Mrs. Markey. Now I'll repeat that advice I just gave you. Get in touch with your husband. Tell him the scheme is off. It won't work. And don't file a claim for that life insurance.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? You just love to bluff me out of $75,000.
No, I just kind of hate to see you go to prison, that's all. And that's exactly what is going to happen if you file that claim.
You keep talking about some scheme. What scheme, Mr. Dollar?
You want it laid right on the line, huh?
I'd just like to know what you're talking about.
And just how much I've figured out, all right. All right, I'll paint it for you in black and white. Your husband was broke, flat broke. I'm not guessing there. I got a report on him from a financial investigator in New York.
I knew nothing about his business affairs.
That I wouldn't know. Anyway, he thought he saw a chance to pull off a swindle on the basis of the only thing he had left, that $75,000 life insurance policy. So the two of you worked it out together.
Did your financial investigator tell you that? Or would you be guessing?
Your husband bought a car under an assumed name and probably rented living quarters somewhere in the area under another assumed name. So it was all set. It was just a matter of waiting for a morning when a heavy fog was down.
You have a fantastic imagination.
Meantime, just in case the accident theory didn't go over, you kept playing young Haynes along so it would seem as though he had a motive for murder. And that part was a cinch. He was already halfway in love with you.
You also have a rather nasty imagination.
So finally, 4 days ago, conditions were just right. Your husband took Haynes out on that fishing trip in the Fathom 5. He anchored the cruiser and sent Haynes off along the reef in the dinghy. Then he set fire to the boat, opened the sea cock so it would be sure to sink. He swam ashore and drove off in the car that he'd bought for exactly that purpose.
As I understand it, Mr. Dollar, that cruiser was anchored a mile or two offshore. Are you actually suggesting my husband swam that distance?
You mean that's something else you supposedly didn't know about?
What?
Oh, that report from New York was more complete than you seem to realize. William Markey has been a member of the Greenpoint Athletic Club for years. He won silver cups in the Long Island Sound Marathon swim 3 different times.
I knew he belonged to the club, of course, but I assumed it was more social.
Of course he could swim that far. That particular talent was probably what gave him the idea for the whole thing.
There's no proof, you know. Not one bit of real proof.
There will be, if you try to collect that insurance. We'll turn up enough proof to reach all the way from here to the state prison. So if you try to...
Will you excuse me, please?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back.
I lit a cigarette and waited for her, wondering why I even bothered to come here. I was fed up with it, sick of the whole thing. Fraud cases are like that, messy and dirty. You see people with a mask down and you get a look inside. And you get to wondering if everybody's like that. Wondering if you'd be like that yourself, maybe, if the price were right. And if you are, you hope you never find it out. All I wanted at the moment was to leave the house, wind the thing up, and get out of town.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar. It was somebody looking for an address. I mean, they had a wrong address.
I see.
Well, I think we at least understand each other now.
Yeah, I'm sure we do.
And I can say only one thing. You're wrong. You're completely and absolutely wrong.
Maybe.
I wish you weren't. I wish my husband were still alive, even under the circumstances you believe. Maybe I wouldn't be on the verge of a nervous breakdown, trying to hold on to my sanity. Maybe I wouldn't be crying alone at night.
You have my deepest sympathy, Mrs. Markey, for everything you're going through.
There's no use at all in trying to talk to you, is there?
Not unless you care to tell me where to find your husband.
Good night, Mr. Dollar.
I left the house and turned down the dark road toward the Pompano Beach Hotel. I'd planned to pick up a taxi there, but after that unknown visitor came to Mrs. Markey's door, I'd made a slight change in the plans. Whoever it was hadn't been a stranger, that I was sure of. She'd been too nervous when she came back into the room. It was someone she hadn't wanted me to know about. And I was pretty certain I could guess who. Evening, Mr. Haynes.
What? Oh, you're Mr. Dollar, the insurance investigator.
Mind if I come in?
Well, all right, sure.
You, weren't asleep, were you?
No, I was just reading.
Been here all evening?
Yeah, sure I've been here. Why?
You haven't been out in the last half hour?
I said I'd been here all evening.
You weren't down the road at the Markey place a few minutes ago?
No, I wasn't. Now look, I've answered just about all the questions I'm going to you or to anybody else. So what are you trying to get at? What's the point?
All right, forget it, Danny.
Sure, forget it. It looks like you're out to try the same thing Wilson's doing, trying to tag me on a murder rap. And you're trying to drag Edna into it, Mrs. Markey. Oh, she told me how you talked to her last night. And I suppose you've been over there again this evening.
Oh, relax, Danny.
I'll tell you one thing right now. You better leave her alone and stop trying to push her around. She doesn't deserve it. She's had too much of that kind of stuff as it is.
Oh? From whom, Danny?
From Markey, that's from whom.
She tell you that?
I suppose you'll claim she's lying. You think everybody is lying. But you don't know her like I do. She's a sweet kid, Dollar, and she's had a raw deal out of life.
Such as?
Markey. The way he treated her, things he made her do. Oh, not when anybody would see it, pin it on him. He was too smart for that. But she told me about it, and there were plenty of times I could hardly keep from smashing him in the face.
Oh, brother, she's got you really set up good.
What do you mean by that?
If you talk this way to Wilson at the DA's office for 2 minutes, he'd slap a murder indictment on you so fast it'd make your head swim.
I didn't kill Markey. Hating a guy is one thing, but I didn't kill him.
Yeah, I know, I know. Because he's still alive.
Well, maybe he is. I don't know. All I know is what I saw out there that morning.
And you saw only as much as he wanted you to see.
Well, maybe so. But I'll tell you one thing. If he is trying to pull something crooked, he's doing it on his own. She's not in on it.
It'd be a little hard for him to collect his own insurance, wouldn't it?
Oh, maybe he figured to get it away from her afterward. I don't know what he might be planning on, but I know she's got nothing to do with it. She's a great girl. I've never known anybody like her before.
No, I don't imagine you have.
I'd lay down my life for her if it ever came to that.
And I imagine that's exactly what they were counting on. Good night, Danny. Expense account item 16, $1.90. Taxi fare the following morning from my hotel to the courthouse. I got there at 9:30 and went over the case with Jim Davis, local counsel for the insurance company. And at 10 o'clock, the hearing on Wilson's petition was open in chamber session, Judge A.G. Campbell presiding. Judge Campbell kept the proceedings informal and the whole thing moved pretty fast. Both sides presented briefs and additional evidence was introduced through verbal interrogation. No witnesses were called. By 10:30, the cases for both sides had been completed.
Very well. There is no further evidence of fact or rebuttal. The court will make its decision on the evidence at hand. Now, in cases of this nature, where it is requested that the fact of death be established by legal declaration, it has been generally held that the substantiating evidence for said request must be essentially unchallengeable. The precedents of law are too numerous to bother citing. Now, in the case we are considering here, it seems to the court that the substantiating evidence is far from unchallengeable. In point of fact, it would seem that a bulk of the evidence indicates that William Markey may indeed be still alive. Now, the court would be powerless to act even in the face of a reasonable doubt. And the contrary evidence here is a good deal stronger than a reasonable doubt. Therefore, in the matter of the request made herein that William Markey be declared legally dead, it is the court's decision that the petition not be granted. If new evidence becomes available at some future time, the petition may be resubmitted. The court is adjourned.
Well, looks like you won, Mr. Dollar.
I told you what would happen.
I sure do hate to see that kid get away with murder.
Oh, forget it. Markey is walking around somewhere just as alive as you or I.
Well, we've all got a right to our opinions, Mr. Dollar. I see he's floating around out there in the Atlantic somewhere.
That's what he meant for us to think.
Maybe so, but I...
Pardon me, Mr. Wilson. A message was phoned in for you, but they wouldn't let me in the courtroom.
Oh, thank you, old man. Will you excuse me, Mr. Dollar?
Sure. Go ahead and read it.
The minute I step out of that office, somebody's bound to start calling... Well, well.
What's the matter?
Mr. Dollar, the Coast Patrol hauled a man's body out of the surf about an hour ago. Been drowned.
So?
They got a quick check on his prints. It's William Markey.
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, a dead man tells a tale, but not the tale he was meant to tell, and thereby hangs the wind-up. Join us, won't you? Yours truly,
Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
And that's Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, part four of this five-part adventure called The Fathom Five Matter. That was from March 1st, 1956, starring Bob Bailey. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Every 6 days in the U.S., a tow truck operator is hit and killed on our highways. It's up to you to remember the three C's of safety: caution, courtesy, and above all, common sense. Remember, the life you save could be your own. This message, courtesy of Nix Towing, where they are working hard for the future of our great community. For all of your towing needs, call 847-671-5290, 847-671-5290. That's Nix Towing in Chicago, on the air because they care.
All right, when we come back from news, it will be Have Gun, Will Travel, one of the best westerns from the golden age of radio and television because it made a transition to TV as well. We'll also tune into the conclusion, The Fathom Five Matter, Part 5, on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. That's all coming your way right after news. Welcome back. Hour 5 of the WGN Radio Theater. In this hour, Have Gun, Will Travel. Before we tune that in, though, want to remind you that there are 5 classic radio shows waiting for you at 100radioshows.com. That's our website, the number 100radioshows.com. Go there, put your email address in, and we'll send you an email within a few seconds with 5 classic radio show links, digitally remastered by Mike Costella. You'll have Suspense, Jack Benny, Richard Diamond, Private Detective, Gunsmoke, and Fibber McGee and Molly. What a great time to listen to those shows, right, Lisa?
It sure is. And what's really special about the shows that we offer is the quality, because there is nowhere else to get shows in this type of quality. I know Mike puts them somehow in pristine quality so that it sounds like they were just recorded.
Yep. Well, we start with the master recordings, and then Mike does a digital remaster on it, and he's a genius.
They sound
as
great.
They say. Well, there's also hundreds of classic radio shows available for purchase at that site. If you decide to buy any of them, make sure you use the promo code radio at checkout and you will save 70%. Okay, it's time now for Have Gun, Will Travel, one of the best westerns of radio and TV. It began, though, as a television show in 1957. Then it made a transition to radio. Very rare. Most shows started on radio, moved to TV, and you can see Have Gun, Will Travel quite often on antenna TV. Richard Boone starred as Paladin on television. John Daner was Paladin on radio. Paladin was a former Union cavalry officer, a graduate of U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and a decorated Civil War veteran. He was well-schooled, highly cultured. He became rich as a hired gun at very high prices. He lived at the Swank Hotel Carlton in San Francisco. He dressed in formal attire, ate gourmet food from Vistro.
That sounds delicious.
He frequented the opera, and he was quite the ladies' man. When he worked, though, he dressed all in black. He had a derringer under his belt. He had calling cards with the chestnut emblem on it, which is the symbol reference to his occupation as a champion for hire. Now, he also wore a custom-made 45 caliber Colt single action Army cavalry model revolver with a 7.5-inch barrel. Did you know that?
That's a lot of details. Yeah,
I like to give you details. Now, the TV series ran until 1963, which is the year I was born.
Oh, wow.
And then the radio series only lasted till 1960. We have a Have Gun, Will Travel broadcast for you now called Helen of Abaginian, starring John Daner from January 4th, 1959. Here's Have Gun, Will Travel.
I've been employed to bring you back, and that's just what I'm going to do, Mr. O'Reilly. Like it or not.
gun will travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of the man called Paladin.
Dancing girl missing. Soma Valley's Armenian colony today sadly canceled its annual wine festival because the principal dancer is reported to have eloped...
Mr. Paladin.
Quiet, hey boy. Please. To have eloped with a passing cowboy. The girl's father, Samuel Abaginian, has offered...
Mr. Paladin,
$1,000 for her return. Local authorities point out that she is of age and they have no jurisdiction in the matter.
No, fuck!
Fire?
Oh, a joke. Ha ha. Yeah. Here, your cigars. I brought them.
Oh. Wait a minute, hey boy. I want you to send this wire for me.
Oh, hey. You leave again already?
Mm-hmm. There. I haven't had a good shish kebab for years. Rice pilaf. Paklava.
Paklava?
Armenian cooking.
Oh, yeah. Paklava. Mm.
Now. After you send that, get me two seats for the Ballet Russe 2 weeks from tonight.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Paladin. You be back?
Oh, I'll be back. Better get that wire off right away.
Yes, sir, Mr. Paladin.
Even if you've had embarrassing dandruff for years, you can get rid of it now in 3 minutes. That's all it takes with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Yes, unsightly dandruff's gone in 3 minutes with Fitch, quickest, easiest of all leading shampoos. What's more, using Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep embarrassing dandruff away. Just apply in the unique Fitch manner. Before you wet hair, rub in 1 minute. This way, Fitch shampoo penetrates right down to the scalp. Next, add water. Lather 1 minute to wash every trace of dandruff out of your hair. Then rinse 1 minute. All that loosened dandruff goes down the drain. In 3 minutes, with Fitch, one rubbing, one lathering, one rinsing, dandruff's gone. At the same time, gentle Fitch can leave your hair up to 35% brighter. To get rid of dandruff problems forever, brighten hair too. Use Fitch regularly. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today, only 59 cents.
The sun was warm, the sky was clear, and the grapes were harvested. And all that was left was to press them in the vats and wait for them to become wine. An ancient vocation of an ancient happy people. And their leader was a great giant of a man named Abaginian.
Stop that frightful music. It sours the grapes before they are crushed.
Husband, must we mourn forever? We have other daughters.
Coming to your ear, woman, is a blow for my fist.
Ah.
Do I produce daughters for every passing stranger? Do I beget children to populate foreign villages? Prepare me an answer.
Look, there's another one.
Huh? You, out.
Good afternoon, Mr. Abaginian.
Out, I say, out.
Do we disregard hospitality?
Out.
My name is Paladin.
The name is of no importance. You're like the other one. A stranger carrying a weapon. You are... Paladin?
That's right.
Oh. Woman, where is our hospitality? I have his certificate. We have exchanged words in the telegraph. Move!
Now, what sort of man was this O'Reilly?
Oh, a despoiler of women. An infidel with evil in his heart.
Only a boy, scarcely in his 20s.
You have no acquaintance with the world, woman. This girl of ours, Paladin, even though she's a dancer to warm men's hearts, she's a lamb, a mouse, an innocent mouse.
She was seen to kiss him the night before.
Next comes my fist to your ear. If our Helen was seen to kiss him, that was a matter of force. Paladin... Have you ever seen a snake transfix a mouse with its eye? This O'Reilly, this is such a reptile. Dangerous. You can overtake them?
I think so.
Good. Both must come back. There must be a marriage.
A marriage?
Custom. They have been together 4 days and 4 nights.
Oh, of course.
Now, what about the fee, Mr. Abaginian?
Oh, I am a poor man, Paladin. A few acres of worthless vines. But I am generous. Although it ruins me for this simple task, I will pay you $200.
The price we discussed was $1,000.
Oh, too much.
Well, since you say this O'Reilly is dangerous, now I must ask $2,000.
Oh, have no faith in my description. Well, Paladin, I'm a poor farmer. On my knees each night I will send you my prayers for your entire life, my gratitude.
No.
$500, my last offer.
You have 1,000 acres, vines, sheep, goats, but for friendship, $1,500.
Paladin, have no faith in these stories of wealth. I have been living above my station. My prayers, the prayers of the entire colony, the thanks of a ruined man, and $800. And I'll have to sell my home and live in a tent to raise it.
What can I do? Such generosity. $1,200.
$900. A diet of grape leaves the rest of my life.
$1,000.
Done.
Good.
All right, seal the bargain. Watch ye, my friend. Drink of fire. Most men drink one swallow, perhaps two. But Abaginian, watch. Nah. No. You drink, huh?
Of course. Will you pour for me?
Enough?
No. Enough.
Here is a man. Go, friend, bring back my daughter.
Yes, of course. I followed their trail out of the Soma Valley and into the high rangelands. Along the way, I talked to a miner, a cowpuncher, a deputy sheriff. All of them remembered Helen Abaginian quite well. Hardly anyone could tell me anything about her traveling companion, except that he wore chaps and boots and carried a gun. It was noon of the second day when I first caught sight of them. They were resting in the shade of a grove of cottonwood. I dismounted and walked toward them. They were so busy with their problems, they didn't notice.
Ma'am, I ain't gonna ride my horse to death for you or no other woman.
You don't love me.
You're doggone right I don't. I told you that every foot of the last 100 miles. Now, ma'am, look. People just ain't gonna believe you followed me.
But I cannot go home now. You have me compromised.
Now that's a lie. I ain't laid a hand on you.
At my father's house, you kissed me.
Well, I was just funning.
There is something wrong with me?
No, well...
I kiss badly?
Well, that's not...
I am ugly?
No, I didn't say that. Now, you just ain't my type at all. That's what it is. I don't like to be chased. It makes a man nervous.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, here now. Let me get you up. Doggone it!
You see? You see, you kissed me again.
No, you kissed me. Now, you ought to be ashamed.
Ashamed? Is it so bad that I love you?
Well,
you let me dance for you and no, I change your mind.
No, no. Now, ma'am. Ma'am, if you so much as move an elbow, I'm going to... Yeah. Oh. How do, mister?
Miss Abaginian?
Yes?
My name is Paladin. Your father employed me to bring you back.
Oh, man, am I glad to hear that.
Both of you, Mr. O'Reilly.
Well, what's your father want me for?
For a wedding.
To her?
To her.
Look, you don't want to take me back for that. Why, a man wants to feel comfortable with his woman. Now her, well, man, just watching her walk makes me feel all edgy. Who wants to spend his life feeling like that?
How old are you?
Mister, you can talk till you're blue in the face. Guns or no guns, I still ain't going back with you, and I'm not going to marry her.
Maybe it's just as well. A really good girl wouldn't have ridden trail alone with you.
You take that back. She's as good as they come.
You seem pretty certain.
I am certain.
It sounds like you just might be in love with her.
You take that back, Joe.
Jimmy! Oh, Jimmy.
Don't worry about him, miss. He's all right. Anyway, he's going back with us.
Oh, Jimmy! Jimmy, open your eyes. Did you hear that, Jimmy? You're going back with us.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I'm going back. But just remember, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Oh, Jimmy.
Doggone it anyway.
In the 1800s, the Monroe Doctrine dictated that Americans put a wall between themselves and the world. Today, however, times have changed. From city dweller to farmer, Americans know they are part of the world and close to it. And the more they can find out about it, the better. That's why the broadcasts of Edward R. Murrow and Lowell Thomas are so popular. Each of these internationally known newsmen has a wide background in the history, the politics, the economics on which current events are built. Whether you're interested in high-level affairs of state abroad, economic developments here at home, or the latest advances of science, you'll find them presented clearly and understandably by Murrow and Thomas, with the touch of wit or human interest that has won them listeners everywhere in the world. If you're not already addicted to the news, as CBS Radio presents it nightly, start this week to follow the broadcasts of Edward R. Murrow and Lowell Thomas. They're both heard Monday through Friday on most of these same CBS stations.
The trip back to the Soma Valley was uneventful. The happy bride chattered all the way, and the reluctant groom grew more surly and silent as the Abyginian vineyards came into sight. Once there, the father-in-law-to-be ordered immediate preparations for the wedding. Aside from 50 people scurrying to gather the best foods and wines and music, these orders also included the business of washing up for all.
When a man has been 7 days and nights with a beautiful woman and says that he did not touch her, then you are listening to a liar or a fool.
Oh, that's nice. Oh,
so now I'm a fool, huh? That's all the thanks I get for being a gentleman.
Now you, get in the tub off of the clothes, scrub.
What? Well, I ain't going to take no bath, and I ain't taking off my clothes.
Better do it, Jimmy.
You, what? Well, okay. These people ain't got no right to pull off my clothes and dunk me in here.
Even a barbarian bathes for his own marriage.
And I told you, I'm just marrying her to protect her reputation. That's all. That's all. You can lead a horse to water. But...
into the tub.
Hey, so don't pour that water on me now. It's the first time I ever took a bath in the middle of the week.
There is a woman at the beginning of all great things.
Woman.
Heaven's best gift. The most delightful of God's creatures.
But can I have a towel?
Are you clean?
Yeah, cleaner than a new laid egg.
Then here is a towel.
Yeah.
Now, she's getting time for the business of the wedding. Here.
Gee, hey, don't pour that on me.
Oil for fragrance. Yeah. Rub this into your skin. Very pleasant.
Oh, I won't do no such thing. Oh, it smells sweet enough to catch flies.
It's customary, O'Reilly.
Well, ain't I got a right to have customs, too?
Rub it in good.
You know something, O'Reilly? You make quite a picture.
You what? Oh, doggone it.
Shish kebab. It's not often a man sits at a table like this. Rice pilaf, keskek, kebakl. O'Reilly? Here, you ought to try some.
No. It's time I was moving along. I went through getting married, didn't I?
You did. But a smart man doesn't ride off at night hungry.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I ain't staying now. Well, I done my part.
No one's keeping you. Goodbye.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Doggone it. I can't run off without saying goodbye to the girl, can I? I mean, after all, I just married her.
No, it's just a formality. It's like you said, you can lead a horse to water. Mm-hmm. Well, goodbye, O'Reilly.
Now, how come all of a sudden you want me to leave, huh? Why is that?
Well, you don't seem to care about the girl. Maybe it's just as well you don't wait and see her dance.
Doggone it. She can just dance her fool head off. I'll be too busy eating. I'll just be too busy to notice. What is this foreign stuff here?
I don't know. Mighty good, though. Here, try this.
Yeah, thanks. Hey. Well, you got some good cooks around here.
You know something, O'Reilly? A bride. Bride always supervises the preparation of the wedding foods.
Mm, she does?
She does. It's customary.
Is that fact?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you know, just because they don't do things like my people. You see, I got me four brothers. Well, that don't mean ain't real down-to-earth folks now, does it?
You sound like you're beginning to grow up.
Yeah. Well, I'm as growed up as the next man. Just because that little Abyssinian gal gets me. I mean, well, doggone it, women don't chase men.
I'm not too sure.
What I mean is, a man don't want a wife that chases him. Well, as Helen, man, if I live with her, Look, Mr. Paladin, just watching her makes me nervous.
Hmm? Not so?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, my stomach flops around, my knees shake. Doggone it, she makes me feel downright miserable. A man wants to feel kind of calm, comfortable with him.
I think they're getting ready for her dance now.
Yeah, well, I guess I ought to be moseying along.
O'Reilly, you know, ancient Armenia was at the crossroads of the world. Mm-hmm. The origins of her dances are lost in antiquity. A flavor of ancient Greece, Persia, perhaps even Minoa. Such dances, O'Reilly, are a language, the most understandable, universal, compelling language of mankind.
Yeah, well, maybe so, Paladin, but I'm just...
And there's your bride.
She's dancing for you.
Oh? I'll be done. Well, she's kind of... What's that she's wearing?
A veil from Persia. Leaving, Mr. O'Reilly?
Oh, Mr. Paladin, that's my wife.
Do you see speed laws and other regulations as restrictive, or do you look upon them as protective? When a police officer writes a summons for traffic violations, do you see him as an enemy or a friend? Your life may depend on your attitudes. Statistics clearly indicate that where laws are obeyed, deaths go down. It's no secret that emotional immaturity is the major factor in our accident rate. How else but childish can you describe the notion that breaking a traffic regulation is a way of getting away with something? Unfortunately, too many drivers on the road subscribe to that kind of emotional outlook. The result is tragic. Almost 85% of all traffic accidents in America are caused by careless, childish driving. We hope you know our traffic laws and the people who enforce them are there to help save your life. The happy bride and the no longer reluctant groom disappeared from the festivities. Custom. It was also custom for the festivities to continue. The singing, the dancing, the eating. I continued with them. But there came a time when it was time to settle the business at hand.
You say what?
Dowry.
Dowry?
All right.
Listen to him. Listen to him, my people. Now, I am a liberal man if he wishes to live with my daughter. But you're mad if you think that Abba...
No dowry. No son-in-law.
Oh.
Your own custom, Abyssinia.
I spit on custom. You think I would pay so much as a single goat to mix his blood with mine?
You offer to let your daughter carry to marriage her bedding and clothing. Such generosity should be written on the side of Mount Ararat for all to see.
All right, perhaps I could spare a goat for milk.
A goat? For milk.
Oh.
He can spare a goat for milk. Beside Abyssinian, the poorest Arab in the mud hut is a caliph who dispenses gifts of amber and silver.
No.
Beside Abyssinian, a serpent becomes an animal of great stature and dignity, and a toad becomes an animal of great beauty.
Perhaps I can afford an acre of vines. I'm a poor man.
Oh, an acre of vines. Now, did you hear that? An acre of vines. Come. Let us circulate the news of such generosity. A messenger to the old country. A runner to the next town.
All right. All right. 5 acres of vines and 2 of trees.
Nope. 10 and 5.
No.
10 and 5 with a house.
No.
50 sheep.
Oh, no.
Yes, 10 goats.
No.
6 carrying milk.
All right. Agreed, Paladin. Stop there. You ruin an old man.
I hope that boy's not in his blood.
His parents had five sons.
Five? Well, a busy day, Mr. Paladin, but perhaps not a bad one. Five, you say?
He told me so himself.
Then perhaps a grandson, huh? A glass of Ochi for luck?
I'd be delighted, Mr. Abaginian. Hey, boy.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, how happy to see you.
Did you get me the tickets at the Ballet Russe?
Oh, hey, boy, did not forget. Here.
Oh, that's fine, hey, boy. I'll just...
I am so sorry. So clumsy of me. I knocked your tickets away.
Perfectly all right.
Oh, those are our ballet tickets.
Oh, you're with the Ballet Russe?
You will see me dance, then. You enjoy the ballet, Mr...
Paladin, madame. As a matter of fact, I do. I saw your company in Paris last year.
So?
And I'm just returning from a visit where I saw the Armenian wine dance, beautifully performed.
Oh, yes, I have heard of that dance. I should enjoy attempting it someday, but where is there such a teacher? Why do you look at me so?
Doggone.
What?
In my imagination, I pictured you performing that dance, Madame...
Petchevna.
May I offer you a cognac?
Delighted.
Gun Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonnell and stars John Daner as Paladin with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Gene Roddenberry and adapted for radio by John Dawson. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dopkin, Dick Crenna, Lillian Byeth, Virginia Christine, and Lynn Allen. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
That's Have Gun, Will Travel from January 4th, 1959, with Helen of Abaginian starring John Daner, as heard on CBS. Okay, Lisa, finally, are you ready?
Part 5, The Wait is Over.
That's right, Part 5 of The Fathom 5 Matter starring Bob Bailey. Let's go back to March 2nd, 1956. The conclusion, yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Barney Wilson here.
All right, Mr. Wilson, I'm braced. Rub it in.
Well, you were a little overconfident.
Overconfident? Let's face it, I made a jerk of myself. After I apologize to you, I've got to crawl out there and apologize to Mrs. Markey.
I wouldn't be too hasty about it.
I've been putting it off for the last 2 hours. After the way I talked to her, I'd rather walk into a cage of lions than face her again. But I thought her husband was alive, and I thought she knew it. Then your boys have to go and pull his body out of the surf.
Well, that's why I called.
I had a tag for an out-and-out insurance fraud.
Mr. Dollar, the way it looks right now, I don't know what it is.
It was probably murder. What else?
Look, if you want to lose your mind, you come on over here to the morgue.
Why? What do you mean?
Mr. Dollar, I've been a detective for 20 years, but I've never hit one before that was as crazy as this.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Miami Beach, to the Home Office, Delta Liability, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Fathom 5 matter. It happened to involve a $75,000 insurance policy. Item 17, $1.60, taxi from my hotel to the county morgue. I couldn't figure what Wilson meant when the cruiser Fathom 5 burned and sank and William Markey's body wasn't found. I thought I'd spotted an attempted insurance swindle. I'd even warned Mrs. Markey not to try to file a claim. And then, a few hours ago, Markey's drowned body had been washed up on the beach. Wilson should be happy. He'd been proven right. But instead, he'd sounded more mixed up and uncertain than he'd been before.
Come on in, Mr. Dollar.
You know, you don't pick the pleasantest places in the world to hold conferences.
I thought you might want to take a look at him. Though I'll be eternally blasted if I know what anybody could tell by looking. Well, there's the lad who's given us all the trouble, Mr. Dollar. William Markey, number 423.
I never thought I'd see him here. I told Mrs. Markey that the only thing that would convince me he wasn't alive would be to see his body. All right, I'm convinced. And I'll never try to outguess an ocean current again. Everything seemed to add up to... Oh, now, wait a minute.
I wondered how long it'd be before you noticed.
Doesn't make sense.
Like I said on the phone, this one is crazy.
This was pulled out of the surf this morning?
Right.
And the cruiser sank 5 days ago. That's when Markey supposedly drowned.
You're on the beam, Mr. Dollar.
This body hasn't been in the ocean for 5 days.
You win the 4-day trip to Bermuda and a complete new wardrobe.
Have you had an autopsy?
Doc Morgan just finished it 20 minutes ago. That's why I called you. Doc wouldn't stick around himself. You know, I think he went out to get drunk.
How long does he think Markey has been dead?
Not over 18 hours since sometime last night. Looks like we were both right. For whatever good it is. He was alive after the sinking, just like you claimed, and now he's dead, just like I claimed.
What was the cause of death?
Drowning. Only you haven't heard the real crazy part yet.
Why? What do you mean?
You remember we found one of his shoes washed in a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
The body was wearing two shoes when they pulled it out.
They always make one slip, don't they?
A couple in this case.
Huh?
It's the second one that nearly pushed Doc Morgan off his rocket.
What second one?
Markey was drowned, all right. But not an ocean.
Huh?
It was fresh water in his lungs, not seawater.
Was Morgan sure?
Swore by it, and then at it. That's what threw him.
Yeah, I imagine. When you get an 18-hour test on a man who's supposed to have been dead for 5 days and find fresh water when it ought to be salt. Well, I guess the late Mr. Markey can't tell us much of anything else.
So, where do we go from here, Mr. Dollar?
Good question. You haven't found the car yet, huh? The one Markey bought under an assumed name?
No, but I gave the boys an extra pride to bear down on it. Half the town force is out looking for it now.
Wonder where he was hiding out for those 4 days.
What I want to know is who killed him and how and why.
Well, the why is fairly easy. It's the who and how that carry the question marks. That fingerprint ID was certain, huh? There's not the slightest doubt but what this is, William Markey.
Oh, you're looking for an easy way out, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, I guess I am at that. Well, then it looks like our number one is the lad you've been after all along.
Young Danny Haynes, huh?
What do you say we go and have a talk with him? Only one thing was wrong with the idea. It didn't work. Haynes wasn't in, and the clerk at his hotel said he hadn't seen him all day. The night clerk admitted that he'd slept through most of his shift and wasn't sure of anything. We searched Haynes' room and found nothing. So for the moment, we left it at that. Wilson put a stake out in the hotel and went back to his office. I went to my hotel and waited. Johnny? Johnny Dollar.
Barney Wilson.
Yeah, what's up?
We finally got a break. The boys found that car.
Where?
Parked at the curb out on the east side of town. May have been abandoned there, or it may be where Markey was hiding out. It's in front of an apartment house.
Have they checked through it yet?
No, they haven't touched it. I'm leaving to go out there now. Want me to swing by and pick you up?
If you don't, I'll sue you. I'll meet you out in front of the hotel. We stopped a block away and walked up to the apartment house. The car was still parked at the curb, and the plainclothes man watching it said no one had been near it. We went on inside and found the landlady, identified ourselves, and started questioning her. Luck seems to still be with us.
Well, you see, most of my guests are permanent, as you might say, or at least as permanent as renters ever are.
Yes, we understand.
In fact, the only unit I've let in the last 2 months is number 14. That's up one flight with a pull-down bed.
When did you rent that one?
Well, let's see now. I think it was about 10 days ago. He paid a month's rent in advance.
He? What was his name?
Mr. Jones. A very nice, quiet, middle-aged fella.
Lived by himself?
Oh, yes, and never went out much. After he moved in, that is. He didn't stay here for the first 4 or 5 days after he rented it.
Until the night the Fathom Five sank.
When did you see Mr. Jones last?
Well, it's a funny thing. He went out yesterday evening and he didn't come back at all.
What kind of a car did he drive?
Well, good heavens, I don't know. But you can look for yourself. It's parked out there at the curb. A friend of his brought it by a while ago.
What?
What's the friend's name?
Why, I didn't ask him. He's an awful nice young fella. He said Mr. Jones was going on a trip and sent him to pick up his belongings. And he had Mr. Jones's key, so I decided it was all right. He's up there packing now.
Well, 13. It's next door down there.
Better take it easy. It's hard to tell what to expect.
Right. He's in there, all right.
Try the knob. Easy.
It's locked.
And there isn't much choice.
Who is it?
Open up, Haynes. We want to talk to you. I said open up.
Get away from that door.
Watch it, Wilson.
I'm warning you. Don't try to come in.
Well, we know now what to expect.
I'll cover the door here, Dollar. You go down and tell Dave to cover the outside windows and call in for a couple of squad cars.
Right. Hey, he's going out that window. There must be a fire escape.
Come on, let's hit the door.
There he is, at the bottom of the fire escape.
Hold it, Haynes!
Stay back!
All right, Haynes, it's up to you. Throw down that gun or I'll drop you. I'm sorry, kid.
He's down.
Yeah.
That second shot was dead center.
I know. I tried to hold low on him, but it jumped up on me.
Well, he said he'd die for her if it came to that.
It came to that.
It was after dark when Wilson and I drove out to the Markey Beach House. There were no lights on and nobody answered the doorbell. So Wilson forced entrance and we shook the place down. We found evidence of a struggle in the study and in the bathroom. Water from the bathtub had overflowed behind the tile and was still seeping out along the baseboard. We found a dressing gown of Mrs. Markey stuffed in the back of a closet, soaking wet. Piece by piece, Wilson collected his evidence, and the picture became more and more clear. He phoned in for a fingerprint crew and went on working. I left him there and went back into town to my hotel and took the elevator up to my room.
Mr. Dollar.
What are you doing here?
Waiting for you. They've got extras out. They say the police shot Danny Haynes. I thought maybe you could tell me what it's all about.
Sure. And what you mostly want to know is how much he talked before he died. Isn't that it, Mrs. Markey?
I don't know what you mean.
Then go on out to your house and ask Wilson. He's out there with a fingerprint crew. And I imagine he can tell you anything you want to know by now. I slipped up last night. I thought it was Haynes who came to your door. But it wasn't. It was your husband. And you told him to come back later. Then when I left, you called Haynes and had him come over.
If he said that, he lied.
I even gave you the idea for it myself. When I said the only thing that could convince me your husband wasn't alive would be to see his dead body. So you talked Haynes into helping you provide the evidence I said I'd have to have.
My husband's body was found in the ocean. They told me that this evening.
Yeah, but he didn't die there. He was drowned in the bathtub at your house, and you and Haynes did it.
You're out of your mind. Danny Haynes was lying.
Then go tell Wilson. It's his job now, not mine. Maybe you'll be able to convince him, but I doubt it. And I'm pretty sure you won't be able to convince a jury.
You think not. I'll get the best lawyer money can buy.
Yeah, you do that, Mrs. Markey, but don't plan on using any of that insurance money for it.
Why not?
Because there won't be any. That policy was already void when you and Haynes killed your husband last night.
What?
An attempted fraud cancels the policy the minute it's committed. In other words, Mrs. Markey, 5 days ago when your husband sank the Fathom Five and tried to play dead.
I don't believe it.
You've lost out all the way around, Mrs. Markey. Your husband, your boyfriend, your insurance claim. And now you stand a pretty good chance of losing your life. A four-time loser. That's really a record. Expense account item 18, $321.60. Hotel and incidentals in Miami and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total $684.95. End of account, end of report. Remarks? You quoted a line of Shakespeare at the start of this case, Ralph. Full fathom five, thy father lies. Well, you're wrong. It turns out to be the widow who lies, and lies, and lies. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, beginning next Monday night.
Next week. Well, if I'd minded my own business, I wouldn't have heard the girl beg for help. And from that point on, I needed help. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Mary Jane Croft, Barney Phillips, Carlton Young, Eleanor Audley, Sam Edwards, Shep Menken, and John Daner. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
And that's Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with the Fathom 5 matter, part 5, the conclusion, from March 2nd, 1956, starring Bob Bailey. Hope you enjoyed that. I want to remind everyone listening that we have a classic radio club. This is a club that we started about 2 years ago, and you can join the club and get 10 shows sent to you each and every month. Now, these are shows that I hand select from over 100,000 master recordings. So the quality of the shows you're going to get are amazing. You'll get 10 shows each month plus copious liner notes. And you can get these shows via digital download, 10 shows digital downloads sent to your computer. And you can listen to them on any listening device. Or you can get 5 CDs with 10 shows in a collector case. To learn all about the Classic Radio Club, go to classicradioclub.com. Right, Lisa?
Right. I love the digital downloads. They're kind of instant. I like that instant gratification.
Yeah, and I know Mike loves the CDs. I actually like the CDs. I have them on my shelf. Like, I just, every month I put the next one on the shelf, and I got, like, you know, all 20-something of these.
And I have a folder on my computer called Classic Radio Club.
There you go. Well, you're technical. I'm not that technical. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Every 6 days in the U.S., a tow truck operator is hit and killed on our highways. It's up to you to remember the three C's of safety: caution, courtesy, and above all, common sense. Remember, the life you save could be your own. This message courtesy of Nick's Towing, where they are working hard for the future of our great community. For all of your towing needs, call 847-671-5290. 847-671-5290. That's Nick's Towing in Chicago on the air because they care.
Well, what are you doing next week at 10 p.m. here on Saturday night till 3 o'clock in the morning?
Well, I think I will be right here with WGN Radio Theater playing five more hours of great classic radio. We have the Jack Benny program, Danger Dr. Danfield, Murder at Midnight, The Bickersons, X Minus One, and another five-part story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
All right. We'll see you all next week, 10 p.m. on Saturday. Stay safe. We'll see you then.